Up until now, we have focused on significance testing. Correlations, chi-squares, between and within ANOVAs, asking the same question, is the relationship in the sample strong enough to conclude there's a relationship between the variables in the population? Great start. But it doesn't give us all the information that we want to have. First of all, it's difficult to compare across studies by looking at chi-square and F-values. Different studies use different sample sizes, and as we'll see today, sample size is important for understanding the results that someone gets when they do a statistical analysis as part of a bit of research. It's going to be important that we understand what effect sizes are and how to use them, so that's going to be the principal point today. The second is that a man named Jim Butcher, who's a really good methodologist and measurement guy, did a presentation at the American Psychological Association one time, and the title scared the shit out of people. The title was basically, "We're wrong 64% of the time." Well, nobody wants to hear this. And we know about 5% of that because we know that if we have a P of 0.05, we're going to have about a 5% false alarm rate. Okay, I buy into that. I understand that. Where the hell's the rest of it? Well, what Butcher had done is a thing called a meta-analysis, which we'll talk about later in the semester, which is a way of taking a whole bunch of studies and putting them together to reach a conclusion about a body of literature or a set of convergent programmatic research. And what Jim had done is he had put, Jim, I know him. I've gotten pretty drunk with him now that I think about it that way. So yeah, he's Jim. Found out that if you take the typical strength or effect size of a psychological study and the typical sample size that we use, we make a false alarm about 60%, we make a miss, a type 2 error, almost 60% of the time. Because research in psychology and behavioral sciences is expensive, it takes considerable investment and resources, and we have a bad habit of running a study that doesn't have enough participants in it. And so we're getting good descriptive information, but the sample size is too small to make a strong null hypothesis significant testing inference. We've used this example before. You get invited to some social event. You ask your three best friends, two say yes, one says no. You ask your 300 closest friends, 200 of them say yes, 100 say no. It's the same two-thirds for each, right? But that 200 out of 300 is simply more believable than 2 out of 3. Because if one of them changes their mind, it changes the outcome. And so that's just a simple example. We'll look at some more of how sample size is really important. So we need to be able to decide ahead of time how big should our sample be. And that's a use of power analysis. Effect size is statistical significance testing. We've been doing statistical significance testing. We use primarily as an intermediate step to obtain the p-value for a statistical decision, especially if you're doing the calculations by hand, and you people are rocking the hand calculations. Keep it up. Whether you calculate a t, an f, a chi-square, you get that summary statistic, and the basis is to then look up the p-value and decide whether or not there is an effect. The other thing that we're going to talk about today is the effect size. The effect size is the strength or magnitude of the relationship between the variables in the population. How strong is that relationship? So the significance test is whether or not we think there's a relationship evidenced from our sample. And the other is, what's our best guess of how big the relationship is? The thing that ties these two together, significance tests and effect sizes, is the size of the study. And it's just as simple as it sounds like. Bigger samples are easier to believe. It's easier to believe two-thirds, 200 out of 300, than two-thirds, 2 out of 3. It's the same effect size, 2 out of 3, but the bigger study gives us a more believable conclusion. When we use R, R is both a summary statistic of a significance test and an effect size. As a significance test, we look up the p-value and we decide whether to retain or reject the null. As an effect size estimate, we know that zero means no relationship, one means a perfect relationship. Jacob Cohen, who did a lot of work trying to help us understand how to apply correlations in practical research, came up with this small, medium, large designation. That a correlation of 0.1 is small, 0.3 is medium, 0.5 is large. Not every research community uses exactly these values because in some research areas you don't get effects this big, and in some research areas a really small effect is very important. But we'll use small, medium, and large just to all be on the same page so that we can make congruent decisions, and it's a lot easier to write homeworks and tests and things if we use this as a starting place. Let me give you an example. Richard Weiner, who is one of our faculty members, did an analysis several years ago and pointed out that the correlation between the jury instructions that were given to juries in capital murder cases and the outcome of those murder cases was correlated a little bit smaller than 0.1. It was 0.09. And you're thinking, how can that be big enough to be interesting? Well, if you translate that back out, that meant that if we consistently used proper jury instructions, 39 fewer people would be inappropriately put on death row each year. That's pretty important. You have to know how to think about the size of an effect. You have to recognize that sometimes small effects are very important, and other times small effects aren't all that important. For example, we worked on a preparation for the terms part, where we actually built an exercise that drags you back through everyone. And it took about an hour and a half to go through that. And it had an effect size of 0.2, which is in between medium and large. But when you translate back that back out, that hour and a half to 2 hours of work was only getting people 2 or 3 percentage point improvement on the terms. Suddenly that doesn't look like that big of an effect for that much of an investment. You with me? So different research areas have discovered different sizes of effects that are important or not important. And before you really start judging an effect, you have to know it within the context of other research of its type. But the 0.1, the 0.3, the 0.5 are a fine place to start, and we'll use those just as tags for now. But what if I want to compare the results from studies that have different comparable DVs or different sample sizes? It's hard to compare mean differences from studies with different dependent variables. And we know that we can only really compare F values from studies that have the same sample sizes. So what do we do? One thing we can do is we can recognize that we can turn an F test into an effect size R. We can do this for studies that used different sample sizes and even that used different specific but comparable dependent variables. Now we have a single quantitative summary, the effect size, that allows us to compare the results from the studies. Here's an example. We're trying to look at the difference between PCs and Macintoshes. Researcher 1 used 20 computers, kept them running as long as they could, counted the number of times each machine failed and was rebooted. You can see that we have Macs had fewer failures than PCs, and it was significant. Researcher 2, working with 30 computers, keep each machine running and measured the time that the computer was running. Both indices of more is better, but not exactly the same variable. The study here found out that Macs ran more of that 24 hours than the PCs and found a significant result. So we know that we found a significant result in both studies, and we know that Macs did better than PCs in both studies. But one of the things we'd like to do is bring all of this down to one single number summary that we can compare across DVs. And so we apply the formula to turn an effect size R out of that F. And when we do that, we find out that these two studies had very, very comparable findings. Both of these are almost large effects. You get a better idea of how comparable they are, how similar the findings were, from the effect size comparison than you do from comparing the means or the piece. So that's one great advantage of that you can take variables with different dependent variables, bring them down to an effect size, and get a solid comparison of those studies. We can apply the same sort of thing to different studies that use a chi-square. Here somebody was working with 40 computers, and they looked to see whether or not the PC failed during that time working with statistical software. Somebody else ran a study with a different number of computers, and they were looking at graphic editing software. We can see that for both studies, we got a significant difference between PCs and Macs, and in both, Macs outperformed PCs. And that's what you can get out of looking at the contingency table and the p-value. But if we go ahead and compute effect sizes from both of these, we can see that the effect is much larger when looking at graphical editing software than when looking at statistical software. This gives us the ability to compare things that are not easily comparable looking at the principal statistical output, but by learning how to turn Fs and chi-squares into effect sizes, we get a better comparability. We can extend this even more. What if some people are using quantitative dependent variables and Fs, others are using qualitative dependent variables and chi-squares? We can turn both of those into R's and they are still comparable. Here we found one person counted the number of times each machine failed and was rebooted, found a significant effect that Macs do better than PCs because they had fewer rebootings. The second person decided to run something for 24 hours or until it failed, using a qualitative dependent variable, keeping track of whether or not it failed. Both studies found a significant effect. Both studies found that Macs did better than PCs, but it's very hard to compare the results from an ANOVA and the results from a chi-square, unless we convert them both to effect sizes. And we can see that these two results are very, very comparable. Now, when you're only working with two studies, or three or four studies, you can often do the hard work and make the comparison and look at the p-values and look at the effect sizes. But when you're doing a large literature review, when you're looking at a lot of studies, it's really convenient to be able to bring each study down to a single quantitative summary statistic of how strong the effect is. I was lucky enough to be involved in a 100-year study of leadership training. They found articles that went back over 100 years that looked at whether leadership training programs had worked or not. We had over 1,400 articles. I really don't want to try and organize and describe 1,400 articles. Remember how annoying it was to do three in the literature review assignment? And three more when you're starting to work towards your project? How do you want to organize the verbal description of the results of 1,400 studies? But when you can take each study and bring it down to a single quantitative summary of the direction and strength of the relationship, now it's pretty easy to take them and say, everybody who studied it this way found a positive effect, these people found nulls. Now I've got a way, because I'm using an effect size, to organize that information around those effect sizes and have much more useful portrayal and description of large bodies of data.